Blog Talk Radio.
It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes, it will. It's been too hard living, but I'm afraid to die. I don't know what's up there beyond the sky. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes it will. I go to the movie and I go downtown. Somebody keep telling me don't hang around. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes it will. Then I go to my brother. Hey, brother, help me please. But he winds up knocking me back down on my knees. Lord, there have been times that I thought I could last for long. But I know a change gon' come. Oh, yes it will.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to another segment of Let's Talk Fort Worth. I'm Carrie Hines, your host. A reminder, we do not own the rights to the music you just heard. Also, please click tag and share. Tell someone Let's Talk Fort Worth is on the air. And we're about to talk about hot topics. We cover hot topics about once a month on Let's Talk Fort Worth because we do a weekly show, and there's just so many other topics that we can't get to doing just a weekly show. So tonight we play catch up on some of the stories you may have missed. We're going to look at the new Fort Worth PD Force Analysis Unit. We're going to talk to Lieutenant Ware Robinson, a 28-year veteran of the Fort Worth Police Department that came up with the concept for the Force Analysis Unit, and he's going to tell us all about it. We're also going to talk about two accidents that occurred here in Fort Worth. They were caused by city employees, but the city took 3 years to settle with the party. Also, we're going to talk about former police chief Joel Fitzgerald. He wants his job back, but through the summer of 2022, the city will spend $500,000 fighting that case. Also, we're going to look at the Tarrant County Commissioners who just approved $45 million for child care and for the child care industry here in Tarrant County. We're going to tell you how you can get in on some of that money. We're also going to look at the new Tarrant County, the new City Council way of doing votes downtown. They have decided that they will no longer provide the description of the agenda item. They will simply provide the agenda item number and then go immediately into the vote. We're going to talk about whether or not that is a way of doing business that we can really appreciate, or does that need to be changed back to the way it was, simply because many people feel it lacks transparency. Also, we're going to talk about inspectors came through the Tarrant County Jail recently, and they said that the Tarrant County Jail was a model for other jails here in Texas, despite the fact that there have been 39 deaths in the Tarrant County Jail since 2019. Also, we're going to talk to Bob Willoughby tonight. Bob Willoughby got a very threatening letter from the city attorney this week, basically saying that he was being accused of harassing and threatening city council members. So we're going to find out more about that particular letter and why he was threatened with a $500 fine. Bob also got his hands on the expenditures for our current city council, and he's going to tell us what they have been spending our tax dollars on. So before we begin, we want to give you a disclaimer that states that we basically, the views and opinions of our guests do not necessarily reflect that of Let's Talk Fort Worth, the host, or advertisers. With that said, Let's Talk Fort Worth. All right, I see many of the parties on the phone. I see Lieutenant Ware Robinson. Good evening, sir. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you this evening?
I'm good. I see Patrick Hackett. Good evening, Patrick.
How are you doing today, Natan?
Good.
Can you hear me?
Good. I can. I see MJ Harper Holly. Good evening. MJ
yes,
Harper
Holly. Yes, I'm here. Good evening.
All right. Good evening. Adrian, your phone line is open.
All righty, I'm here.
Oh, great. All right, listen, we're going to start off with Lieutenant Ware Robinson. He's a 28-year veteran of the Fort Worth Police Department, and he's going to tell us how he came up with the idea for what he calls a force analysis unit. And he's going to tell us what that department or unit will be doing and what we need to know about it in order for us to better understand how they will be working with the Fort Worth Police Department to make a better use of force policy, I guess I would say. Good evening, Lieutenant. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself before we begin?
Yes, ma'am. Hey, I'm Ward Robinson, 28 years on the department. I'm currently the use of force coordinator for the Fort Worth Police Department. And prior to this, I was the commander over the violent crime section with homicide, major case, robbery, and all of those different units. And about 6 months ago, I became the use of force coordinator. So I've kind of brought some of my investigative skills into the use of force realm of trying to look at how we're doing things in Fort Worth.
Okay. So use of force is something that probably comes up a lot at the police department, as many people have filed complaints of, you know, police brutality and that type of thing. So your department, first of all, we want to better understand maybe what we don't know about use of force. Can you tell us what constitutes an officer feeling that he should or she should use force?
So most of the time whenever force is used, the mm-hmm. majority of the time, it's in the response to some sort of resistance, and it's just how the officer responds to that resistance to try to gain compliance. Most of the time, we're able to gain compliance with the extremely minimal amount of force.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, but that could be interpreted different by, you know, from one officer to the next, correct?
It can be to some extent, but you look at the training that the officers go through and the different types of force and how to apply it. But I mean, we're talking everything. I think a lot of times the public looks at force as, you know, whenever the officers are using personal weapon strikes, you know, striking somebody with their fist or the palm of their hand, or, you know, using a taser or using pepper spray or baton, something of that nature. Those are more of your intermediate levels of force. Mm-hmm. Whereas you have a lot of uses of force that don't necessarily rise to that level, such as like taking somebody down to the ground just to be able to gain control over them to put handcuffs on, or the pointing of a firearm at somebody in a high-risk situation, such as stolen vehicles, felony traffic stops, taking felony fugitives into custody, things of that, such as that. Those are kind of your lower level incidents.
Okay. So according to policy or protocols at the police department, when is an officer supposed to terminate force or use of force?
Once we gain compliance.
Okay.
Once we gain compliance, they should be de-escalating force from that point.
Okay. So we see a lot of instances where, you know, the public, you know, and we're not trained police officers, a lot of times where the public feels like maybe a taser should be used versus maybe a deadly force. So is there any protocol in place that determines taser versus, you know, pulling your firearm and possibly, because we know you all are trained to kill, not to, like, shoot someone in the knee. So is there a protocol on taser versus pulling your firearm?
So using your firearm and actually discharging the firearm at somebody is going to be, you know, for the protection of life. Beyond that, we like to be using a less lethal form of force. But I will say that we are not trained to kill. We are actually trained to stop the threat. Our intention is never to kill anybody. It is to stop a threat. So basically what we would be doing is aiming at the center mass of the target, which is the easiest thing to hit, because you have a larger area to hit. So basically that's going to be the thoracic area of a body.
Are you all trained that if a officer finds himself or herself in a situation that they feel may be a situation in which they may have to use deadly force, are you all trained to, you know we live in a stand your ground state, and in some cases people, you know, feel a need to, or some states say retreat if at all possible, and then other states say you don't have to retreat. So are you all trained to, if at all possible, to prevent having to kill someone if that comes to that, that if you are possibly able to call for backup and get yourself out of the situation, are you all trained to do that, or are you all trained to meet aggression with aggression?
Well, I think we're trained more to try and deal with each scenario as, you know, an individual scenario, an individual situation, looking at the totality of everything. Sometimes if we were to retreat, does retreating place others in greater danger by allowing a suspect to get away to where they can do more harm to others? So I think that we're trying to try to look at it from the totality of the situation and not just a situation of we're always going to, you know, gain ground and hold our ground type deal. There are times that it may be better to regroup, and there may be times where that's not an option. So we need to be looking at it from a totality of the entire situation.
Okay. So you all like that one. Okay. And, y'all, this is my last question, and y'all can jump in. But they're on the tip of my tongue. And so, you know, some instances in videos, and I think Manuel Mata may call in tonight. He deals with videoing police officers in the city, you know, following and making sure everything is done according to protocol. That said, if a person finds themselves in a situation where the officer is just using excessive force, and it's not right, does the citizen have the right to defend themselves, or must they continue to comply even though what's being done, they know it's not right?
You know, I will say that you will always have the right to defend yourself. Mm-hmm. However, I would also caution people in believing that they are in that right 100% of the time. Mm-hmm. I would tell you that the easiest way to not have force applied to you is to comply. And if the officer is in the wrong, they can always go back and go to internal affairs. They can go through the Office of Police Oversight Monitor. They have the officer supervisor that they can speak with. If somebody's done unjustly, I strongly suggest that they go that route. But to stop any force that may be getting applied, compliance is the quickest, easiest way to avoid any additional force.
Understood. Okay, y'all, listen, we're going to go to the phone lines, 817-885. Good evening, y'all. Let's Talk Fort Worth. 817-885.
Hello.
Hello.
Yeah, can you hear me?
We can.
Yeah, my name is Manuel Mata. Right.
Oh, I just
and my question was to the guy, right? He says that that their whole point is to, what did he say? To stop the threat, right?
Mhm. Mhm.
Okay, so how is it that an officer, right, is going to stop a threat when a person is filming a traffic stop, which they've already been trained on how to deal with since 2017? So my question is, if an officer is aware that we have the right to be there filming them, and then they say it's to stop a threat, how am I a threat if they're the ones that are closing the distance, putting their hands on me, and then threaten me with arrest for a crime that doesn't exist? So how is that they're, that's my whole thing. Like, if an officer fears that he has to deal with me to stop a situation, which there isn't nothing that they can say that I'm doing that's threatening them or the life of the person that they're pulling over, because I don't walk up to them, I don't threaten them or nothing like that. The only one that's threatening and violent and aggressive are the officers that don't understand that a person can walk up to them, that can film them and sit there. I don't like the fact that they use their safety as a reason to close a distance on us and then make it to where we're the ones that are violent, aggressive because of the way we're telling them we don't like what they're doing to me. That's what I do. Right, and the only thing that I've ever heard from them that they don't like is the fact that I cuss at them and I don't respect that they're violating my rights. So how do I do that? How do I take care of my safety and make it to where an officer isn't afraid of a camera? Because that's what I walk up with, a camera, and I have three of them. So I'm not understanding why I'm a threat to an officer's safety, situation, traffic stop, if they've been known since 2017 to respect what we do.
Let him respond, Mr. Mata.
Okay.
So here would be my recommendation in regards to that, is that you've got to also understand that an officer's safety is not just dealing with you. An officer's safety is also dealing with the occupants of that vehicle and everybody else that's inside that vehicle who have the potential of having weapons or anything else that could be used against those officers. So whenever you step in and become too close and distract them from that, what they're focusing on, which is the traffic stop, if you start getting into their personal space or the closeness that you also become a threat. Now you're distracting them from what they're trying to get accomplished. That is where the threat is coming from. It's not necessarily coming from you. It's now that they have to turn their back and their attention away from something that could cause have possible harm to them or the people around. So, you know, once again, I would suggest that, like I said earlier, that the compliance is the quickest, easiest way to not have force used against you. So if the officer asks you to step back, compliance would be the way to achieve no force being used against you.
Okay, I understand that, but my question still is, right? Okay, I understand what you said, and I somewhat agree with it, but the thing that gets me, sir, right, is your job. You said that you're going to track these type of incidents where force isn't necessary, right?
No, we're trying to track all types of force now, from takedowns with no injury to all the way up to the use of deadly force, and there's a number of different categories in between those two. And we're trying to track all of those different things. The other thing that we're starting to look at tracking and trying to do a better job of tracking is the when we are able to de-escalate situations. Right now, you know, we're only tracking whenever force actually winds up being used. We're not tracking when force doesn't have to be used because the officers were successfully able to de-escalate situations without applying any force. So, you know, those are things that we need to start looking at as a department. That way we can try to determine why are certain officers able to de-escalate situations better than other officers? Why are some communities, are we able to de-escalate better in one community versus another community? Do we need to learn a different way of being able to articulate what we're trying to get accomplished and communicate with different people in different parts of town? And these are all things that we as a department, I believe, need to be taking a closer look at. That way we can make the improvements that we need to make. I'm not suggesting in any way that we're perfect.
Okay. I accept that. But I have two things, right? How do y'all track that? Like, do y'all track it by the body cam footage or by the complaints?
So right now, we're tracking only uses of force. We're not tracking all of the de-escalation situations.
I understand that,
conversation.
My question was, how are you tracking it?
Okay, so like that would be done
for the officer's police report.
Let him.
So, whenever the officers complete the report, then there are certain things that they would check within that report and certain categories that would be required to be filled out. They do that along with their body cameras, and that's part of what I'm the reason for the new force analysis section that I requested the department to go to this format. And basically what we're doing now is roughly – and I pulled some stats up a while ago just to take a look. For the first quarter of this year, 69.3% of our uses of force that we were tracking were pointing of a firearm, and 13.2% were takedowns with no injury. So roughly 70 to 75% of our uses of force were of these low-level incidents. Well, we weren't, in my opinion, doing as good of a job as what we possibly could have been doing in reviewing all of those, going back and looking at every one of those body cam videos along with that report to make sure that they are matching up with what the officer is saying, to make sure that the officers are doing what they're doing is correct. Because, you know, like I said, we're trying to be more consistent in that review process, and we're trying to be more thorough in that review process. And that was the whole purpose behind starting up this new unit. On the other side of this, you know, I want to also let you know that according to the stats and the numbers, less than 1%, 0.76% of the time that officers are actually out answering a call for service, 0.76% of the time is any type of force used on any individual. less than 1% of the time. So that's a number that nobody else ever looks at. Nobody ever puts out there. All they talk about is that, well, today the officer did this. Well, that one incident in the big scheme of things, as bad as it may be, the officers are out there doing good quality work on a daily basis, and the numbers are there that back that up.
Yeah, because okay. That was my whole thing, because how are you able to tell? Because an officer, when signing the police report, if they don't check that use of force box, and mm-hmm. you answered my question, they have to match the video of his body
right.
camera. Because that was
so
my
the,
whole
the,
thing, because while you're
yeah.
there being processed into it, there's a supervisor there that they take the police report. And I asked him,
right.
does he watch the body cam footage? And he told me no. He just listens to the officer. And then I've seen him in my case. They've made the officer in every arrest that I have write the police report over 3 or more times. The supervisor on duty. So that was my
mm-hmm.
thing, and you answered it for me. You're going to make sure that the police report matches the video. And that was my concern, because they're not doing that.
Yes, sir. That and
yeah,
once
so.
Again, that was one of the things that I wanted to get accomplished with this new unit was, okay, so here's the other thing, is that if you look at our department as a whole, you know, we're the, 11th largest city in the nation now. We've got over 1,700 sworn officers on the department, and they're all out there doing these different – on 6 different sides of town with 80 different supervisors that are supervising the officers responding to these calls. Well, you've got 80 different opinions in regards to what the officer's actions, were they correct, were they incorrect, and everything else. That's 80 different opinions versus now I have one unit that's looking at every one of those, and that one unit can be a lot more consistent in the way that they're reviewing and looking at that than 80 people looking at it or 80
yes.
different people looking at it. So being able to achieve that consistency, being able to ensure that everything's being looked at equitably and fair across the board is what we were trying to achieve. And, of course, the other part of it is just like you just mentioned, is that, yes, there's so many calls for service that the sergeants don't have an opportunity to look at all of these different videos. So they do have an audit process that they go by to look at the different videos through an audit process by random selections. But if it's pertaining to force, I wanted to make sure that our department was looking at the video along with the report so we can make sure that everything's matching up. What the officer's saying in the report is what's happened on the video as well. And then we can just move forward from there. And, you know, if there needs to be some additional training, that can be a recommendation or whatever the case may be.
Okay, Mr. Mata, we've got to move on.
I just think it gives us an opportunity to be a more professional department.
Absolutely.
Okay.
You know what,
thank you, sir.
Mr. Mata, I would suggest that Mr. Mata and Lieutenant talk, you know, one day, you know, because I think he has a lot, Lieutenant, that he could offer from his experience with filming officers that may aid you in what you're trying to do or trying to accomplish with that department.
Yes, ma'am. You know, and it's one of the things that I mentioned earlier with you is, mm-hmm. you know, I'll be honest and I'll throw it out there to everybody that's listening right now. My mm-hmm. opinion and the way that I look at things are going to be biased because I've been a police officer for 28 years. This is what I know. So mm-hmm. it's hard for me to look at it from a different perspective at times just because this is what I know. So mm-hmm. anytime I have an opportunity to be able to listen to others and mm-hmm. hear their perspective on things and try to get these other opinions, I'm certainly open to listening and hearing those things because it may give me a perspective that I wasn't looking at. And it's something that I need to take into account as we try to put new policies in place.
Great. So, Mr. Mata, I'm going to suggest that you get in touch with Lieutenant Robinson probably early next week so that you all can make a connection and maybe get some good work out of that department. Okay.
Yeah, I'd be willing to do that. I'm all for something that's
sure.
positive and it's a change.
Wonderful.
Yes.
Thank you so much.
I'm willing to sit down and listen.
Wonderful. Okay. That's a step in the right direction, y'all. Bob Willoughby, by the way, your phone line is open. Okay, panel, listen, before Lieutenant gets out of here tonight, do you all have any suggestions for him or comments or questions about what this new force analysis unit will be doing? And I have one before you get out of here tonight, Lieutenant. Somebody's got to echo with their machine. You can't listen and be on your computer at the same time. Is this in any way supposed to replace the citizens' request for a police review board?
You know, my hope is that the citizenry would be able to look at what we're trying to accomplish now and
mm-hmm.
see the value in it.
Mm-hmm.
Is this an attempt to try to prevent that from happening? No. That's a decision that the chief, city management, and the citizenry need to make. And I'm not comfortable weighing in on whether my personal beliefs or thoughts is that we need one or not.
Okay. All right. Listen, panel, before the lieutenant gets – okay, go ahead.
I've got a question. Hey, Mr. Lieutenant, thank you first and foremost for coming on. We greatly, you know, it's greatly appreciated that you're talking to the community, to us, the citizens of Fort Worth. Say 28 years you have on the force. You know, most people retire at 20, so 28. Hey, that's very commendable. But my question would be, my question and observation would be in regards to the even with the new use of force. How do you classify new use of force? What is it?
Right now it's being called the force analysis section.
Force analysis. Even with that coming into focus and possibly being something that's going to govern law enforcement by and help to, you know, the relationship between us and law enforcement. To, you know, the one thing we fight against is when it comes to investigations or accountability. Withholding law enforcement accountable for the decisions they make while on duty, when there's proven, you know, there's evidence that there's been, you know, wrongdoing, is the Police Officers Association. Now, and I only say that because I feel like the Police Officers Association in any department ties the hands of any investigative work. They tie the hands of the police chief making a decision regarding as to rather not to how to discipline an officer. So with this use of force analysis, and I'm pretty sure you're a part of, and you probably can't, you know how to answer, but how much do we have to worry about the Police Officers Association? Because we see how they operate. And mainly it starts with the head, which is, what's his name?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
It starts with him. So we see how they operate. You know, we see how they operate. If he represents them, but and he basically I go on the record say he's a bully. He's a bully. And no disrespect to anybody else in who wears the uniform, wears the badge, but as an individual, this is my personal perspective. He's a bully. So what's to say this is you all are going to come up against, you know, resistance from the Police Officers Association when you want to bring your recommendations forward to hold somebody accountable, you know what I'm saying, for whatever they've done while on duty?
So, you know, you're certainly entitled to your opinion and of Manny Ramirez. I will say that the Police Officers Association is somebody that represents the officers, just as, you know, defense attorneys or like lawyers represent citizens from time to time. So I think that the officers are entitled to that representation. However, I will also say that in my experience, I have never had anybody from the association ever try to change my evaluation of what may have taken place. They've never tried to sway me in any way in regards to that. I can also say the same is true for the Office of Police Oversight Monitor. I work very closely with Ms. Kim Neal, Catherine Huckabee, Nathan Benson, all from the police oversight office. And, you know, I reach out to them and get their input whenever we're looking at, you know, changing policies and stuff like that. The other thing is I serve as the chairperson for the Use of Force Review Board. And during my time as the chairperson on the review board, we have we've reviewed different incidents. I can't go into any of them because some of them may still be tied up in litigation. But there are, you know, there's been a number of times that the Use of Force Review Board said that they believed that the amount of force used was excessive or unnecessary. And nobody's ever challenged me whenever we've done that. There are other times where we believe that the force was appropriate and that the officers did try to de-escalate when it was appropriate to do so. So, I mean, we try to look at it as openly and as honestly and as fairly as we can. I can tell you that the police oversight monitor has a monitor in the room during those discussions, whenever those are taking place. They do a write-up of their own to send back to be attached along with the write-up that comes from the Use of Force Review Board. That way the chain of command gets both viewpoints as it goes through. If we have a time that on the Use of Force Review Board that there are differing opinions amongst the sworn officers that sit on that board, then I'm the one that writes up what goes to the chain of command about that particular incident, and I will try to do my best to represent both sides of that argument whenever we do differ in opinions. So I try to keep it as fair and as balanced as I possibly can. And I can tell you that, you know, like I said, I haven't received any pushback from either side in regards to any of that. Actually, it's been just the opposite. Everybody that, you know, on our department has been very respectful of the fact that I have been trying to be fair.
Wonderful.
Thank you.
Well,
thank you.
Does that answer your question, Adrian?
Yes, I'm satisfied here. Thank you, Lieutenant, for that. Thank you, Lieutenant.
Well, thank you, Lieutenant, for so much for stopping by. We hope you have great success with that new department. We hope it's everything we need it to be with the use of force issues that we had here in this city. And hopefully you and Mr. Mata can connect and get some good work out of your department.
Sure, and he can reach out to me the same way that you were able to earlier today. If he'll just reach out to the Office of Police Oversight Monitor, they will get me in touch with him.
Wonderful. I think Mr. Mata is still listening, so we will do that. Thank you so much, Lieutenant, and have a great holiday.
All right. Thank you very much. I'll do the same.
All right. Bye-bye. Well, yeah, that got some questions answered. So we know now what that department does. Seems like, wow, that's something that's been needed in the department for a while. So hopefully we can get some good things out of that department. All right, now let's move on. Uh-huh.
Carrie, and I just want to echo that they have somebody that's not new to it. 28 years of, you know, time invested in law enforcement with the Florida Police Department, I think it's starting off on the right foot. You know, it's not somebody that has to be trained or, you know what I'm saying?
Sure, I agree 100% with that. On that, y'all listen. I don't know if you all are reading the newspaper on a regular basis, but there's a lot of money about to move through Tarrant County. Our Tarrant County commissioners just approved $45 million to invest in the child care industry. So that came under the American Rescue Act. I understand $2 million will go towards strengthening child care businesses and the quality of those businesses. $15 million will go towards stabilizing quality child care and increase whole child support. $28 million, I understand, will go to be used to expand infant, toddler access and infrastructure for the highest need families. So if you're somebody who has a child care industry business, this is the time to, as they say, tap in. So I think that's a great thing. I think a lot of people can't get a lot of things done because they don't have adequate child care. So I think there should be a lot of people now able to get adequate child care with this particular $45 million investment into that particular industry going on. I mean, that's major. I wish I was somebody that did good with kids because I would definitely start me a child care business. What do y'all think about that? Do y'all think that's a good thing to put that much money into that industry? Is it fair to other industries, or what are your thoughts?
Well, if they're going to follow I'm sorry. Go ahead. I apologize. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, okay. Well, thank you, man. This is Patrick. Well, Ms. Hines, this coming from like 10 years plus in education, right?
Right.
I should have chimed in earlier, but just 10 years, my niche has always been middle school, right? And
really?
There's always – I don't know if many of you know it, but there's always been this curve in regards to education. You can always track the trajectory of a student at third grade, right? And what you'll see is a lot of low performance across the board in your different districts in the Metroplex, in Texas, and really throughout the nation, especially through this whole post-pandemic curve, right? And so the key is not necessarily just, how can I say, the child care industry, but say, for example, I stopped at a particular place today, and I had heard through the grapevine great things. They have a lot of young children on reading level before even they hit the first grade, right? Some of them before they hit kindergarten. But then the problem is in education is, and I'm saying this from an educator perspective, right, guys? If you have looked at it from where we are at right now in 2022, we have poor school systems, right? Which goes back to poor leadership, which goes back to poor vision, visionaries inside the schools, and it goes in so many different ways, right? But if we can pour as much money as we want to into the child care industry, but any seasoned teacher will tell you that if the home life is not on par, we as educators have now taken on the task of not only being an educator, but security guards, but counselors, mediators, and things like this. And so, I mean, with the $45 million investment, that would be good. And when I was looking at this the other day, I think we have a major issue here in America. We are spending, and if you look at it, Texas is at the top of the totem pole. We're spending $25 million, $40 million, $30 million, $25 million. You can check the district, going from Allen ISD all the way down south in Cypress and in that Houston area. We're spending multi-million-dollar packages on schools, football stadiums, but our children from high school, middle school, and elementary are performing below academically in reading and math. So I just wanted to kind of throw that out there to me that, it's a major issue. And so when I was looking at this topic the other day, I was like, we're spending more money on football stadiums and then instead of hiring extra educators. Some schools don't even have security guards because they're paying them $10, $11 an hour, right? And so with that $45 million, I think that's good. But across the board, there is so much need that's to be needed because once those kids get about that child care and they step up onto an elementary campus that's poorly ran or there's overpopulated classrooms, that where they are at as begins to decrease in time by the time they hit the third grade. So I just wanted to throw that on the floor.
Thank you for doing that. Wow. So if they could spend more time in that pre-K era with this money, let's just say if you were not just a daycare, but you were a daycare that was preparing them to go into elementary school, if you really focused on early education with some of that money, you feel like a lot could be accomplished?
Somewhat. It's almost like you know, trying to get a hold of cancer, right? And you just kind of touch the wound. You have issues such as – you have issues. Now, mind you, I'm a middle school educator, right? That's my niche. You have issues such as DeSoto ISD. Everybody should be following their lead. There should be no – it's almost as if we have an issue with our social media on our campus, telephones, right? It is not the same school system that they were 20, 30 years ago. Imagine students walking out the room and they're FaceTiming their parents because they got in trouble, right? I see it every day. You have modern day, you have these modern day fights in the bathroom where kids are actually filming this and they're showing it, and you're seeing what's going on in different schools and different districts and things like that. And so one of the things that I would also propose would be actually depending in your modern urban education centers, your Dallas, your Oakland, your San Francisco, your Atlanta, all across the board, we need more African-American male and Latino male teachers on the campus, all right? I've been on a few different campuses from elementary to middle school, and so what I would propose is use some of this money to begin to get some male teachers. You can see the difference. Elementary and middle school, those are two different levels, right? And so when you have – when you see campuses with strong male educated influential men, we're talking about men, right, that are fathers, grandfathers, does something – it gives a certain sense of stability to a campus, to children, and to, you know, children that are often going astray. So the $45 million is good. But I think it could be used in different areas, such as schools that are low performing. Add in additional teachers, right? Get in some more security-based things, you know, on campus. Some campuses have issues. I'm not going to initially speak on it, but get more educators in there. Get some more full-time tutors on deck to help monitor and to track students. From one grade level to the next, whether it's math, whether it's reading and things like that. But as far as the whole child base, that could be a good start, but it has to have a strong curriculum. It has to have these children reading. But then the thing is, once they go to that educational level of elementary, they have to the torch has to continue to build and build and build. But statistics show, Ms. Hines, and for the listeners, that for some reason, somewhere in that third grade, many African American and Latino males, it's a decline. So by the time they get to me, they're behind academically by a grade or two, and not even we're not even dealing with the behavior issues as well.
Wow, Adrian, you were saying what?
My question. So this money we're speaking of, that was approved by the you said Commissioner's Court of Tarrant County, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's $45 million. That's taxpayer money, right?
Well, it's federal tax money because it's coming under the American Rescue Plan Act.
I know it's. I've been kind of like on the tip of just follow the money, you know, because like you say, it's just blank checks that they're going to be able to write to various, I guess, organizations or whoever, saying that they're dealing with education, you know, and nothing changes, you know. So hopefully there's going to be some accountability for the money that's going to be, you know, utilized for this cause. But like the brother stated, we have to figure out a way to get. I'm sorry, we have to figure out a way, and I know people say it's possible. We can't. We have to figure out a way to get our communities back involved with the schools, you know. And I think it starts as simple as with involving with the PTA, you know, the PTA. It starts there, but it's like more focus. It's more focused with academics than it is education now. You know, everybody's trying to get their baby to be the next. Top recruit for football or basketball. It's no focus on education. You know, trying to get us to the next level of for adulthood. And I think a lot of what we face is, you know, we know it's just systematically, you know, within our communities how our children are up against so much, and then they have to bring that bring that to school, and it makes it harder for the educator. So we have a lot to do.
See, what I see with this money. Go ahead, Patrick.
The piggyback on them, Ms. Hines. Everything the brother's saying is correct. It's so interesting that he said that. I'm the son of an educator, right? And so I couldn't understand it then, but I understand it now why my mother had such a tight hold on me, right? And I'm thankful. Mm-hmm. And I found myself the last day of school yesterday praying for my eighth grade boys, praying for not necessarily the girls, praying for my young boys. I'm part of a mentorship group on campus, and what we do is we try to train our young boys, a specific group of 30 to 25, things such as do not walk in a grocery store, do not walk in a store with your hood on, right? Make sure your pants are up. Just different ways of how to move and look at society. But he said something. I actually started a PCO group on campus, and I'm going to say this, and I'm going to leave it at here. He's correct. We can pass by parks on any given day in the African-American community, and when it's Pop Warner time, mm-hmm. mama, grandma, aunties, mm-hmm. and the babies are running around practicing football. Let it be time for a PTO meeting or time for open house, and you literally can hear the crickets outside, right? And so as the brother was saying, our priority and getting the community, and it starts first with us as men, back involved, saying, listen, you have a better right to become a federal judge or attorney or a brain surgeon than being the next Stephen Curry. And it starts all at home.
Wow. Y'all, there's so much can be said with this. We got to move on, but there's a lot that can be said with this $45 million and how to tap in and where it should be used. That we could go on for a minute on that. Y'all, we're going to talk about two lawsuits that came down the pipe or was on the city council agenda this week. And those lawsuits were settled, I guess I want to say, this weekend. The city council decided to pay out these people. And one was for Stephen Keyes, basically Stephen Keyes and Sherry Edwards versus the city of Fort Worth. This was for $150,000. And there was also another one for Berta Wally DeGarza, basically her and Artemio Garza Morales sued the city for $120,000. And we're talking about they were involved in accidents that were caused by a city employee. However, for $120,000 and $150,000, our city tied this up in court for 3 years. Y'all, that's not the kind of city we should be living in. I mean, you know, in my opinion, these people were doing whatever they were doing, going about their day, and some kind of way a city employee caused the accident. Why are we playing Goliath to these Davids and, you know, not releasing this? I think Thomas Trollenkazi said it best. This should be somewhat like a standard insurance claim where someone filed a claim of you found out that your client was guilty, so the money was released by the insurance company. I don't think we should be holding up claims like this if we're wrong. I mean, if somebody is asking for something that's unreasonable, I get it. But I don't know, y'all. I don't think we should be holding people up for 3 years. I mean, trying to wear them down to settle for less than what they're owed. I mean, is it me or do y'all agree something's not right there?
It's not you.
Okay. It's not me?
Look here. This current city council and it is, we could say it's a brand new city council because maybe, I mean, Gina Bivens, Flores, well, Mona's out, so Gina Bivens and Flores are the only two remaining vets of this council because everybody else is new. So this council is basically, they're becoming their own undoing. They are becoming their own undoing. With things like this, we didn't even have to know about this, but the fact that they drug it out and they had to vote on it, now it's public, and now how they, how many other people have they done like this? So if I was in that position and I was like a millionaire, you know, people always seek to try to sue somebody. If I was a millionaire and I know somebody was extract money out of me, I'm going to try to sell it as fast as I can. Why drag it out? Because the drag it out, the more people find out, oh, he got what? They trying to get what? Okay, let me figure out how I can get some money from him. This city council is becoming its own undoing, and it's showing more and more how they their tactics and how they're doing things. It's like they're starting to thumb their nose up at. It's like they're starting to thumb their nose up at us. But yes, 3 years is far too long, especially like you stated, when there is fault already shown. I'm sure it probably would have been less, but the fact that they drug it.
That's what I'm confused about. Why would? I don't know. If I mean, you know, and I know when there's an accident involved, the police come out, they determine who's at fault or not. And so my question is this, was it some kind of tricky business, you know, where they did not want to show the city employee at fault? Because I know one of them was caused by a police vehicle. I'm not sure if the other one was, but I know one of them was. So I know I don't want to be involved in an accident involving a police vehicle, because I always feel like if that ever happens, whether I'm responsible or not, I'm going to get the ticket. So however this turned out, these people were found not to be responsible for the accident. So I don't think that it's fair to tie up someone in court for 3 years. I think that that's just wrong.
You made a valid point when you called in. You are trying to people. You're running these people through court, and everyday people don't have money to continue fighting against litigation, you know? You don't have, people don't have resources like this. So even though they settled, how much, we don't know how much is going to their attorneys. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Thank God that they survived, you know? We don't know. Well, they didn't stay red. I'm sure they sound like they survived because they still stayed in lawsuits. But regardless of the fact, how much, you know, we don't know how much is going to their attorneys, you know. And
but
then
isn't 33 and a third? I thought your attorney gets 33 and a third.
Yeah, you're right. Something to that. Yeah, I think
The
mental anguish as well. You're dragging this thing on. You're dragging this thing on. Why? When you don't have to. That's a drop in the bucket. Write the check, be done with it.
That's
now,
right.
But what you have, more people know now they can sue the city.
I said that was not where I was going with this, but it was just to me. And Bob Willoughby, by the way, your phone line is open. You know, I think it just doesn't make sense to me to strong arm regular people who weren't doing anything and were found to be innocent of causing the accident. So I just don't know why we're doing it like that. I guess I'm, you know, maybe it's me, but something ain't right about taking the taxpayer's checkbook and strong-arming regular people for these, you know, in these cases where people are just wanting to get paid to get their life back to where they were before the accident, and we're stalling. I just think that's bad. I don't know. That's just me. And I'm going to move on. I'm going to get out of that with y'all, but y'all just decide for yourselves if you think it's right for us to be – using all that money to, you know, pay attorneys to stall cases that could easily have been settled once it was determined who caused the accident and it wasn't the other party. That's just it. That's just me on that. Listen, if you just tuned in, you're listening to Let's Talk Fort Worth. I'm Carrie Hines, your host. Tonight we're talking about hot topics, things that you may have missed in the news or just got by you somehow. We're talking about the Tarrant County Jail got called by the inspector a model jail. They said it should be considered a model jail for other jails in Texas. Also, we talked about the fact that we have a new unit of the Fort Worth Police Department called the Force Analysis Unit, and we earlier talked with Lieutenant Ward Robinson, who came up with the idea of how to better handle use of force cases that come through the City of Fort Worth Police Department. So we're going to just keep an eye on that department and see what they come up with, because I think if Mr. Mata goes over there and tells what he sees on the street and he compares what he's seen out there cop watching with the 28 years that Lieutenant Robinson has had on the force, I think they're going to be a force to reckon with, pun intended. All right, y'all, listen. I'm feeling corny today. Also, we're going to talk about Chief Joel Fitzgerald. I made the news this week, by the way. May 25th, I was in the newspaper. Fort Worth Star-Telegram quoted me because I went to a recent city council meeting, and I told them, you know, I think this is getting really expensive, and I don't know, and I'm paraphrasing, but I basically said, listen, either give the man his job back or settle with him, because this is getting crazy. What we found out was that the city has already spent $190,000. They already had allocated another $50,000. And so at Tuesday City Council meeting, they went back to the table and asked for an additional $250,000 to be used through the end of this summer. So that will be a total of $500,000 that they have or will have used by the end of this summer to fight former police chief Joel Fitzgerald from getting his job back. Now, y'all, is it me or is that too much money? I'm just like, I mean, I just think, well, that's a lot of money. What do y'all think? Everybody's getting
You know what? And this is all to keep him away. First off, let me say this real quick. It's a waste of dollars, right? They could be using that money to be doing something more constructive. But let me get this correct. Didn't Chief Fitzgerald get hired like somewhere up in the Midwest somewhere?
You mean hired from the Midwest?
No, didn't he get hired on another police force?
Yeah, he wasn't from here. Yeah, he came from another police force. I forgot it was like, wasn't it somewhere in Philadelphia or something, like in the Philly area? It wasn't Philadelphia, but somewhere.
I think it was something happened, and I thought he went toward somewhere in Illinois anyway. But anyway, are you saying that the chief is, he's fighting to get his job, he's trying to get his job back here in Fort Worth? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Well, yeah, how crazy is that?
Well, and the thing that stands out about me is that's like walking out of a toxic situation only to come and return and it's 10 times hotter.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think that's healthy, you know, not the type of climate that we're in right now. So I think with that situation, he wouldn't even – That's almost like you getting fired from a job or you walking away from a job and you know it's toxic and you know the powers that be are against you, but you want to go back. I don't think that's healthy right there. So, you know, that's just – I don't even think that's logical. I think his heart may be in the right place, right? But I just think is that realistic? I don't think that's realistic, not in this city and not in this town. I think that he should just kind of, you know, keep it moving in a positive manner, right? And just kind of go from there. But I don't think that would be a healthy situation for him and his family to try to come back here and to get that position again.
Well, you know, we do know that he beat his case with the EEOC. So the EEOC found that he was wrongfully terminated. And a little of the backstory, y'all, what happened was, we understand that the former chief had been investigating some stuff secretly downtown and felt like he stumbled on some corruption. He had then gone to the FBI and was going to be somewhat of a whistleblower. And what happened was that on the day in which he was supposed to meet with the FBI. Let's just say the meeting was at 3:00. At 2:30, he was called into the office of the mayor, city manager, both, and told that he was being terminated. And their reason for terminating him was allegedly concerning a verbal altercation that occurred at a, what do they call that, CLEAT? Is that what they call the police officers kind of organization?
Some type of, yeah, some type of meeting they have annually or something. Yeah.
Right. I think he went to a CLEAT meeting, and Ramirez said something to him, and there was an exchange. And it appears that Manny Ramirez came back and told the city that the former chief had been unprofessional in the manner in which he addressed whatever it was that Manny Ramirez said to him. And so for that reason, that's what they said they fired him for. So EEOC felt like that didn't have anything to do with his job here in Fort Worth. So he beat his cases with the EEOC, and now he's trying to get his job back. The strange thing is, I agree with you, Patrick. I just feel like, you know, why come back only to be fired again? So I think I would just ask for the bag and the money, and I think I would get out of Fort Worth. But I think his family still lives here, and I think he's trying to make his way back here. So we've already spent, or we'll have spent, $500,000 by the end of the summer, and they are prepared, I guess, to come back and ask for some more if that ain't enough. But they're spending this $500,000 on outside legal counsel. So is this getting crazy, or is it just me? And I don't know. I just think enough is enough already. I think we're going to lose today.
I think possibly the chief's I think that's probably part of the lawsuit, as far as you know, if you say as far as him getting his job back, that might be tied up into the lawsuit as well. So rather, you know, if it's proven, you know, if it's, everything is ruled in his favor, I think more than likely it'll just come into play. I don't believe it's separate from any, you know, from the overall lawsuit. But I think the chief, I pulled up an article. It was dated September 17, 2021. This should give us some insight as to what the chief was up against here in Fort Worth. It states, and I quote, North Texas, CBS, DFW.com, former Fort Worth Police Chief Joel Fitzgerald, who is the first, again, he was, listen to this, he was the first, he is the, who is the first black chief in Waterloo, Iowa, is facing opposition from current and former officers as he works with city leaders to reform the department, including the removal of its longtime insignia that resembles a KKK dragon. So just take that first paragraph, what I just read, and look at Fort Worth. He was doing the same thing here in Fort Worth. He came in, he started trying to reform some things. We don't know what kind of opposition he came up with behind the scenes, but I'm sure there was some there. And then the Jackie Craig situation happened, and that's when the dominoes started to fall. When the Jackie Craig situation happened, it basically divided the community, because you had those who were in support of the chief and trying to uphold him and get behind him and give him a chance. And then you had those who were on the side of Ms. Craig and, you know, the law enforcement, you know, the wrongdoing, this, that, or the other. And then in the midst of the Jackie Craig situation, that's when the video came out. And then the two brothers were demoted. And that put more logs onto the fire for the chief, because he dealt with those two brothers that got demoted because they said somebody, one of them, leaked the video of the incident with Jackie Craig. That started to have some issues for the chief. And I think what that did was, once the city saw that there was a division with the chief in the community, it was easy for the city to begin backing away from him. It was easy for them to start, you know, backing away from him. And what? Go ahead, Karen. Sorry.
So wait a minute. So to be clear, the first thing you read about Waterloo, that's where he is right now.
Yeah, that, I think that's day, where he's at right now.
Yeah, this is dated September. Yeah,
can I make a comment on this?
Yeah, you can.
Can I make a comment here and jump in a minute?
September 17, 2021. Go ahead, Bob. I'm sorry.
Okay, go ahead. I didn't mean to break in too much. I just want to jump in real quick on this. I'll tell you, my point about the chief is that I want him to come back here. I want him as a chief of police. You can go to my FWDistrict5.com website. You can see the video of the chief we have now on there. And he doesn't answer questions. And if you think they're going to put anybody in this city, it's going to be good. The only reason that chief's not here is because he's done proven that he will be a whistleblower. And that's why I want him back here. He done proven himself to be a whistleblower. That's why he's being done like this, because of that. And that's why I want him back. So, I mean, he'll get another one. We're just going to get someone that will not speak out or not be a whistleblower. That's all we're going to get stuck with, like we have right now. Also, this Wednesday's Fort Worth Weekly ad is based on Mania, Ramirez and the chief police. My half-page ad, the Fort Worth Weekly, will be in the Fort Worth Weekly on that. And then, Carrie, on your side, you're doing a great show. I enjoyed the show. And then the lieutenant of his own, I wish I got a chance to say something to him, because one thing I wanted to say to him for sure, would he run for mayor? Because he got my vote. And then and then your pictures on here, the new cop car lights, I don't like them. They're like Christmas trees or party wagons. You know, they don't seem like, you know, when you had one spin around the top, that was authority coming after you. I mean, maybe everybody else likes them, but I was looking on your screen. You got the picture on there, those new and all the little lights around. It looks like a Christmas tree. It doesn't seem, it just, it's kind of wimpy coming after you, you know? So anyway, I'm going to hush up here, and when we get time, if you want to talk about any of this stuff, you let me know when to come in, Carrie. I'll hush up.
Your phone are open. You can chime in anytime. I just say this about Chief Fitzgerald, y'all. This is just me. At some point, it's like two bullhorns at it, you know, and once they lock horns, you know, it's just like they're just sitting there and they're, you know, they're just bumping up against each other. Well, the problem with that is I don't know how much money Joel Fitzgerald has to fight this, but the city is fighting it on our dime. So by the end of the summer, we're at $500,000. So does that mean that if Fitzgerald doesn't quit or, you know, whatever, then we continue? Because, you know, at some point, if the EEOC has found him not to have done anything wrong to be fired, then civilly in court, it almost stands to reason that they're going to, and I can't say with 100% certainty, but I would think civilly they're going to say he deserves his job back if that's what he wants. So why are we pursuing this? I mean, what is it that we're afraid of what's going to come out if he comes back, or are we just don't want him back, or I don't know, where are we at in terms of what does the city want in terms of him? If he does not back down on his request for his job back, where are we at? We're just going to continue to fight this?
Well, maybe, Carrie, check this out. If he wins his case, that looks bad on the city manager, David Cook. I think that's his checkbook because he's writing all these checks. He's the one giving out all this money. It looks bad on him, so he would have to go. He would have to go because he made the decision. He made the decision to fire the chief. It was his. He had the final say. So he would have to go. We know Best Price is gone. So we don't have to worry about that.
I'd like to correct that a little bit.
Say what?
I'd like to correct that just a little bit. When you say it's the manager, David Cook, that made him go. Now, our manager does have the right to do whatever morally is right. Morally, he might have been wrong doing this, but actually the mayor, and it's in writing, the manager's job is to please the mayor. So if the mayor turns around and tells David Cook, fire him, the cook's job, is do his job, is to fire him out. Now, the manager has the right to walk away from that job because he's doing something unethical or stay with it. But now this could be, and I don't want to take what you said, now it could be David Cook's thing, okay? It could be his. Mm-hmm. But I just want to open that door up. It could very well be the mayor and not David Cook yet till we know which one, or it could be both. So anyway, I just wanted to correct that just a little bit, okay? Thank you.
Well, that's true, Betsy Price. And Betsy Price was the mayor at that time, so I'm sure Betsy Price had some say in firing him. I don't think the city manager would make the decision on his own without consulting with the mayor to say, what do you think? Because I think it was some issues that were being brought up by Fitzgerald about the garage that was being built downtown. You know, a little backstory again, y'all. There was a garage being built downtown, and if I'm remembering correctly, there were several bids on the garage, and the mayor's son-in-law was connected. And when I say mayor, I'm saying Mayor Betsy Price's son-in-law was connected to one of the bids. He worked for one of the companies that was bidding on the garage, and his bid was not, their bid was not necessarily lower than the lowest bid, but they got it. And I, if I'm not mistaken, the bid that they made was $1 million more than the lowest bid, but they got the bid. And I believe that was something that Fitzgerald brought out as well. So, you know, my point is this. I don't think if he has a whole bunch of knowledge about things that maybe downtown does not want to come out, I don't see him coming back. I just don't know where this ends, so when does somebody quit? Because ultimately, this is just my thing, and we're going to move on, y'all. If somebody does not want you on their job and they have to hire you back, then what they're going to do is ride your back until they get a chance or an opportunity to fire you again. Do y'all agree with that? I mean, it's just inevitable.
I wouldn't even risk it.
I mean, that's obvious. I mean, you know, one of the gentlemen made a comment. I think he's, from what I've seen from afar and just kind of, you know, reading and things like that, I think he's a highly noble guy. But I think I do concur with you, Mrs. Hines, on that. That's like you, that's almost like you knowing your time is up and every little thing that you do. I'm going to give you a perfect example. I was working at a school, and it was, I forgot what happened. And maybe I just stood up and said something, and I was talking about something. Anyway, I remember getting suspended, coming back. I promise you, no, 2 days later, I left. The policy was leaves this particular location at 4:30. I left at 4:27 and got an I got a memo. I got a memo for that at 4:27. Mm-hmm. So it's one of those things where, and one of the things that stood out as I was listening to you guys that stood out is I'm looking at things from a different perspective. I'm looking at Chief as this forerunner who's going in and he's saying, hey, this is not right, this is not right. But you have these old power structures who are saying, mm-hmm. this is how it's always been. This is what right. we're doing. We've been cutting checks to family members, right? We've been allowing them to win bids. And mm-hmm. we've been doing these things under the table. Who are you to come in and yeah. disrupt this process? This is what this really is all about. So whether he's yeah. – they just want him to be a face of a police department, go in, do your job, and sit down. But he seems to be has like almost like a heart and a spirit of a reformer. And we see what's taking place right now with the chief and from here to Iowa and things like that. So it is what it is, and it's politics at this.
I agree. 100%. Y'all, that's what it is. Wait, now, how this is going to end, who knows? But I just say, as far as a taxpayer of the city of Fort Worth, we at some point should say we don't want to continue to fight with the taxpayer's checkbook. Now, if y'all have some other funds somewhere that y'all can pull out of a pillow, fine. But $500,000, and he may still have to get his job back, and then you're going to have to pay his legal fees and all his back pay, that's just a little too much. That's just all we got to say on that tonight. So moving on. Listen, city council doing business differently downtown, if you have not been paying any attention. I was the first one to break the story, y'all. Listen, the way they're doing it is scary. If you pay attention to the city council meetings that are every Tuesday, you will notice now on the week in which they have agenda items that they're voting on, like it was this week, what happens is they will now announce the agenda item number, and then they will immediately, unless there is a speaker, either for or against the agenda item, they will immediately go into the vote. The prior way of doing it was They would announce the agenda item number. The city secretary would then read the description of what the agenda was item was about, and then they would vote if there weren't any speakers. So the new way of doing this lacks transparency. And Thomas Soylent-Kazi went downtown this week, and literally he stood up on every single agenda item, and he described what it was for. Now, we don't feel like the city should force that to happen. We feel like the old way of doing things was the right way of doing things, because we're talking about billions and billions of dollars that are voted on downtown all the time. And so if we're talking about things like this Joel Fitzgerald case, it was on last week's agenda. If they had proceeded as normal, the new way, no one would have even known what the vote was about. They would have announced the agenda item number, and then they would have immediately gone and to the vote unless there was a speaker for or against it. That said, the two accidents that we just talked about, they were also on this week's agenda. No one would have known what they were about because, again, they're going from the agenda item number directly into the vote. So y'all think something's wrong with that?
Hey, Carrie, one more. You missed one more.
Which
Carrie
one?
Moon, Carrie Moon, who no longer sits on the city council, still been appointed to a board, possibly being appointed to a board, which shouldn't happen at all. You know what I'm saying? So I think
But didn't they take that off the agenda item?
Yeah, they took it. Hey, they knew we're gunning for them, Carrie. You know they know. Come on now.
What Thomas did.
We're not like, okay. Hey, Carrie, come on. we keep it in perspective. We keep things in perspective. Carrie, what Thomas done was beautiful. I remember when we had talked about doing messaging, as we were messaging. The fact that he done it, I say, wow, like-minded people do like-minded things. And Thomas, I can give him the nod. He can articulate things better than I can. I'm going to run my mouth. I'm going to say what's on my heart. I'm going to speak it. But him being able to get up there, cool, calm, and collected, read off, explain to the people, and then take consideration, which I thought was so important. He took the consideration of those who depend on this council meeting, the hearing impaired, the those who amongst us who have disabilities. I thought that just grabbed my heart when he did that, because he brought everybody into the conversation. This city council is becoming their own undoing. Mm-hmm. I'm starting to think that what the Star Telegram allowed, the depiction that was made of the Four Star the council 2 weeks ago in the editorial section of the opinion with the cartoon, I'm starting to believe that is starting to be a reality of this council, starting with the mayor. Everything starts with the mayor, you all. Everything starts with the mayor. So the behavior we're seeing amongst
you got to tell them what you're talking about when you're talking about what was in the editorial.
Oh, okay. So the two – okay. Thank you, Carrie. So 2 weeks ago, there was a cartoon that was the cartoon depiction in the Four Star Telegram's editorial section, I think the opinion section, where a cartoonist depicted the city council as basically spoiled children. They were mad because the people did not vote in their pay raise. They voted everything else in regarding the bond and the charter issues, but Proposition F, which dealt with their pay raise, It got voted out. So they were depicted as children, feeling like they deserve something when they haven't really earned it, And I truly believe that everything starts with the mayor. So the behavior that we are seeing with the council members, which I hate that the new council members are falling into the trap of it, because that'll make you a one-term person if you start playing follow the leader. Even the mayor, I want people to know, she can be voted out. She can be one term. But everything starts with her. Her behavior is starting to she's becoming unraveled. People have to pay attention to body language. I pay attention to body language. She's starting to become unraveled. And I'm sorry, Mayor. You have an opportunity to correct this. You hold the position of power, but you choose not to. They're making everything personal, and we see that with Bob. They're making everything personal. It shouldn't be personal. What happened to the days of Betsy Price where counsel did not respond to people in the chamber? They just listened. Now it's
That's
a back and forth. It's a back and forth. Now it's a back and forth. You know, so Carrie it's sad. It's like they're thumbing again. They're thumbing their noses up at us, showing that we're doing what we want to do. Kudos to Chris Nettles, and I'm gonna digress.
Yep.
Kudos
yep.
to Councilman Nettles for at least
yep.
being willing to not vote on a particular agenda item. You know.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
And that was the one regarding the chief.
Yeah.
Can I ask the question
sure.
real quick?
Sure.
Who is the mayor? I'm saying that in a respectful manner. She comes out of nowhere, right? And we are this progressive emerging – well, I'm not going to say progressive. Let me put that to the side. We're this emerging city. Population is booming, North Texas, in Fort Worth. And and when we talk about the issue of the chief, no, they don't want the chief here, and nor do they want any person that they feel is going to stir up the status quo of things being ran as is in the power structure called Fort Worth, Texas, right? And so, you know, it's almost to the point it the powers that be. Who is the mayor? I haven't done my background check because okay, and guess what? And the reason why I say that, this is the reason why I said it, is because when she became mayor, I said, come on now. I said, Ray Charles can see this. She had been being groomed before Betsy Price even stepped down. I'd never seen her in the city. I mean, I didn't. She just comes out of nowhere, and boom, she's the mayor, right? And so that is the issue that I have. I would like somebody to explain. Is that Bob? Who is?
Yeah, that's me. That's me, Bob. She came the same way a lot of our council members come. On the establishment side, they're always grooming people to take these places. On the outside, the general public, which is 900,000, we're not grooming people to run for these places. So the only people that show up is during election time, and then they're gone. You know, and they're not showing up at meetings or bond meetings or downtown. Half those people ain't been to a council meeting, but they are groomed for. And she was Betsy Price, what I understand, aide or something like that for several years. So she's been in the city and groomed and that. And I know what you mean by coming out of nowhere. We don't know of her, but she's been there, and that's how she got put in there. But yeah, they're grooming. The establishment will groom people to take these places like Michael Crane and so on like that, you know. But we're not grooming anybody from the outside to try to replace these people with.
And Bob, and I totally agree with you, because the thing about it was I didn't even have to do any research to know, okay, she's been groomed. That's where she came from. And so the question now is, do these people that are being groomed, do they have the interest of the general public in their mind? Or is it just the ruling percent?
I'll tell you the truth. It doesn't matter how they're groomed or how they're done. We outnumber them 1,000 to 1. And if we can't get people down there to fight to put our right back on the Speaker City Council, we allow them to do that. We're not going to get anything done. That's my major battle, and that's why I got this letter from them. Council knows what I'm fighting for. They see the whole picture. I see the whole picture, but I think the general public does not see the complete picture. And if they did, maybe they'd understand that this is the most important thing, is to get our right back on city council to speak. We should be down there with pitchforks fighting something, because they took something from us, okay? They took it away, okay? And when someone takes something from me and I know who took it, I'm going to go get it back. Now, everybody else may not feel that way, but I do, and that's what I've been fighting. And that's why I got this freaking letter from them, because they know I'm fighting to get it back, and I'm about to do it by myself. We're going to get our right back to speak, or they're going to kill me trying. So, anyway... Go ahead.
We're going to put them in the atmosphere. Okay, let's set this up. First of all, Bob, we used to have city council meetings at 7 p.m. And Bob was saying to the city council, I think the public speaking should be at the top of the agenda and not the bottom of the agenda. And it is my belief, and I could be very wrong, that somebody had a twisted sense of humor and decided, okay, we'll pick Bob. We'll just change it and put him at the top of the agenda, but we're going to move the time. So instead of 7 o'clock, they moved it to 6 o'clock, and they put it at the top of the agenda, but they took it away from being 4 times a month to 2 times a month. And so Bob has been going down there every single week fighting with them, you know, about this. And so recently Bob got a letter from the city of Fort Worth, a very threatening letter. So, Bob, can you kind of tell them what the letter said in just
sure.
I
can run over just a little bit of this that I got from them. It's not the first time. I got one in 2013 is what started me this. And that letter about me full of lies went behind my back, and I found out by accident, and that's what got me started 10 years ago. When they can tack you behind your back and don't even let you know it packs full of lies, and you can't do anything about it, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So that's
mm-hmm.
another thing, too, with council. That's what brought me up to where I'm at today. And here's another one. So I'll be bringing it to city council next time we're down there to speak at our public comment. And secondly, Carrie, it's not from a twisted mind or a joke against me. This is a strategic plan when they moved us off of those. It's a cover-up that you're right about. I wanted to move us to the top of the agenda like other cities, and they couldn't do that because that's
okay.
the whole name of the game. You put us on city council at the top, we have leverage. We have a weapon. We have a freaking cannon. They didn't want to give us that, so they took us off completely, put us in quarantine with them, and made it look like, and that's what a lot of people say, oh, well, we still get to speak here and they're happy. But no, we're in quarantine with these crooks. And here's what they sent me, just to go over real quick, is the highlighted parts, is harassment of city council members fired by city council meetings. Yes. Well, you watch these people, McCarthy, he's got after a meeting, he's got press all around him trying to ask him a question. He's not yelling. He's being harassed or threatened. That's just part of it. These people don't like it because they never had anybody do it. They can't come down after the meeting and mingle with their inside establishment that's not going to hit them with questions. They get pats on the back and their little social club party. I'm down there. I'm messing up their playpen. They don't like it. So they call it harassment. And another thing to go, Elizabeth Beck publicly called me a racist. And crying in public called me a dickhead. Now, and then they say I'm threatening them. I'll tell you. Well, we're going to talk about that some more. But let's move down to the next one. It says here also, that says a lot that I was doing things. It's not true. 100% not true. Everything in that part of the deal. Next one is use your candidate website while speaking at city council meeting. Yeah, I've been saying that for 8 years down there. And what it is, fwdistrict5.com is a website. Now, what it has on that website is none of their business. Now, if it has threatening things or psychopath things, it might be, maybe the Texans might want to look in, okay? They should look in at something like that, but something like that. But if it's just talking about campaigning and exposing what they're doing and showing videos of them and they don't like it, so they don't like me saying my website, but it's an address, and I have every right to say that address. Now, it does not say campaigning FW District 5. It just says FW District. Same as if I put my physical street address on the screen down there, and I have a sign in front of my house saying I'm running for mayor, okay? Well, it doesn't say it. It says my address at the screen. But if you go to the address, you're going to see a big sign saying I'm running for mayor in front of my house. Same thing with my website. You know, same identical thing. You go to my website, you go into my home. And you go to my home, you set what's there. You don't tell me what kind of curtains are put up. Okay, we'll talk about that. And plus, I'm going to be with them. There's some stuff going to come out about this when I'm in time. I mean, this is the second time I've done it. Now, posting signs in the city right away. Now, where does this come from when they're mad at me about down at council wanting to ban me from talking down there, posting signs right away? I've never got a sign from the city, I mean, anything like this from city council or our attorneys about posting signs. It always comes from code compliance. I've gotten them before them saying you need to move your sign, show me pictures and everything, okay? Or they've called me. Code compliance handles that. If there's any violation, not council or the mayor. So, but they got it in here kind of intimidating way that we're going to go back and get you for some of those signs if you don't quit messing up our playground. And it's got like a $500 fine. Well, I say bring it on, okay? And I've asked for pictures and all that stuff. I need all that. But that's just beautiful. It's just a little. And how much money we probably spent paying taxpayers' money to write this crap up. And what they're doing, actually, they know it's lies. And they know I know it's lies. But here's what they're doing. They're going to put this out, and in a little letter, they'll come with something else and something else. Then they'll go back, and then they'll put it on. Well, we gave him a warning back then. But that's all they're going to want to let out. We gave him a warning here, we gave him a warning here, and then they're going to move you out. Well, at this point, we're fighting to get a letter of, I've got a withdrawal of this from the attorney. And she's going to have to write something up, some kind of thing, either give me some proof or write something up to return it so I can have some protection there. But yeah, our city council shouldn't be doing this kind of crap at all. And but we outnumber them. If we get enough people involved and start working on that, we can control our. It's up to us. It's the people. We have control of this complete city. We outnumber 1,001. We just got to get the word out and start getting people. That's what I'm doing. I'm putting out leaflets, and it's a good way to lose weight too. So I go out and put out leaflets all the time. Someone mentioned earlier about neighborhood association or the PTA. That's a good thing. Start getting involved with our PTAs. Get involved with your neighborhood associations. That's what I met Mr. Cook with for an hour about our neighborhood associations. They're really, some of them really bad and need to be off the data bank. But nevertheless, that. And if you like, Carrie, if I got just a minute, if I don't take up too much time, I'll touch on these expenditures I just got. Or is there anything else you want to bring up before then?
Absolutely, I want to know about the expenditures. Let me ask one question, though. Didn't the letter also say something about sexual harassment?
Oh, well, yeah. In that first part, in the... Okay, in the first part, it's kind of headline, harassment of city councilmen. Then it falls underneath that part, sexual harassment, you know, blocking their way, threatening,
Councilwoman Elizabeth Beck accused Bob of sexual harassment. Now, y'all.
Now, wait a minute. Hold on, wait a minute. It doesn't say which one does it. It doesn't have anybody's name. That's the problem with this letter. See, there's no names, no nothing, no substance in this letter. It's just ghosts that did this, you know? And then they think I'm going to be scared of this, okay? So there's no names we can't say, but we know it probably. And that's who I asked for. I said, Beck, I want to know who are these people, okay?
Wow.
You can accuse me, and I can't know who my accuser is? Come on now, okay? But anyway, we know it. And like I said, the answer to this thing is not down there fighting with them. Getting our neighbors like where how important it is to get back. That's why I'm trying to take back over my neighborhood association for 3 years. They've had secret elections. They're owned by council. You'd be surprised. These neighborhood associations are owned by council members. Now, we do have a new director of community engagement coming in, and that might be because I've been going after Michelle Goot for our last director. I've been going after the last 8 months in the paper down there. So now she's moving over. She should be moved out. We'll see about that later. But we got a new director coming in on the 1st of community engagement. And Mr. Cook told me I didn't even have to ask him. He said he'd get me a meeting with him right away. So that was great. I liked that of Mr. Cook. I didn't even have to ask him. He'll get me a meeting.
Do y'all see how tight this thing has Bob wound up? I mean, seriously. And Bob's going to give himself a heart attack with fighting them down. Yeah, I mean, seriously. But this is what I believe, Bob. I really do believe this. I feel bad that any city council person would say that you're threatening and harassing. Now, I think that's a stretch, and I think the city attorney getting involved in that and putting it on paper lacks good judgment. And I think Thomas Torlingazi went downtown this week and spoke with the city attorney about the letter, and she somewhat, in my opinion, according to the video, kind of backpedaled a little bit. But I think she should have done that backpedaling with Bob and not necessarily Thomas, but he did get her to admit to a lot of, you know, this stuff was just fluff. I mean, for the most part, or that's what I interpreted from the video, that you know, it just wasn't anything that could hold weight, and that it was really pretty much a threat to try to get Bob to kind of back away.
You know, our mayor and council is abusing their power to do stuff like this, okay? That's what they're doing through our attorney. They're abusing their power that they were entrusted with.
Wow. All right. Well, y'all listen. Yeah, but pay attention if you get too close. Don't get too close to our council people. They sit up on the dais for
you
a reason.
Like,
so don't get too.
You'll see why Chief Jarrell is doing what Fitzgerald's doing. That's why he's out. He got too close, and that's why he's fighting to get back. You know, that's what crap he was fighting.
Well, Bob, I'm gonna say this real quick before you get to your expenditures. Hey, Bob, if you ever,
they're not mine.
Ever,
now, wait a minute. These are not mine. Make that clear.
Well, you know,
city council.
Hey,
okay, I'm just kidding. Go ahead.
Bob, if you ever think about a lawsuit, if it ever comes to that point, please put me on. I'm starting to feel harassed. I need to get some of that city.
Hey, I'd love to see that. That's another myth. There's a myth right there you can't get. And I've been to the attorney general and all the way around. Find me a lawyer. You just find me a lawyer. Now, you'll find one if you're suing for damages where there's money. Oh, you got a list of lawyers because they see money in that thing, okay? You file for any kind of ethical reasons or like the redistricting, the only two lawyers good for redistricting are already on the city's retainer. So that's another thing I'm fighting, too, with my senator about now, and I might do some 5-foot by 10-foot signs on Senator Hancock here in the next 2 weeks to put up against him because my senator has been he's worthless. What kind of representative? He doesn't return a phone call. And this is what I'm sick of. Doesn't have the respect to even return a phone call. So, but anyway, I'm going broke As a matter of fact, you may want to put me up in your backyard pretty soon. I think I'm going to be out of money. So, no, I'm just... but you find me a lawyer. You find a lawyer, and then we'll talk, okay? That's the catch-22.
Well, Bob, tell us about these expenditures. Now, Bob, on his own dime, went downtown this week or a couple of weeks, no, several weeks ago. And
God, it's taken almost 3 weeks to get this crap.
Well, about 3 weeks ago, and asked for the expenditures of the current council. Now, it's a dime I wouldn't have spent, but Bob Willoughby spent it. So, Bob, what did you get for your dime? And it was quite a bit more than a dime, y'all. What did you get? It was almost $100. What did you get for it, Bob?
An ulcer?
Wow.
No. What we got is 153 pages. A lot of it was blanked out, which she told me she didn't charge. Also, I have a meeting with the person at Open Records next Tuesday at 9 a.m. because we're going to sit down. I got a folder with about 40 pages here that we can't, you know, here's one just for a sample. It's a Hilton Hotel, American Airline flight, $563, and I think it says it's going to Houston, okay? Here's the problem with this piece of paper. You look at this, the times, the flights, both pieces of paper, everything. I don't know what council member did this. I don't know who flew on this plane. There's not a name, no words. I've looked it over, so this is one of the about 40 pages I've got of stuff I'm taking to them to say, well, you got to tell me, look at here. I think, well, this is crazy, but this might be it because it says here, invoice number, CONF, and it's blocked out, and then we got Williams. This might be Jared Williams, maybe. But it's not very, you know what I mean? You guys look, I just now came across after looking, I didn't see it, Williams, so it might be his, it looks like, now that I found, but you got to find the name. And some of these, I can't find no name. I just happened to find, that's a bad sample, the one I show you that I find the name on it, that's not good on my behalf. But here's some beauties.
But wait a minute, a flight to Houston doesn't cost $563 either.
Well, the American Hotel, the hotel at the Hilton, and probably rent a car, and then that martini. They're awful expenses. But anyway, there's a lot more here to look at that I got to find names. But here's some things they staple together, groups of these expenditures. And they range, they're like on a spreadsheet here, okay? And you got one, two, three, four, five columns rowing down. And the first one has the amount. Okay, the amount starts as low as 2 cents. Oh, two. Okay? From 2 cents. Can you dig how much it costs to print that and give all this? And I had to pay for that 2 cents. But anyway, from 2 cents, okay? Now, it goes all the way up to the ones that are in triple digits. Up to 12. Now, they go all the way up, you know, 39 cents, $1.45, you know. I'm saying it starts at two and it works its way on up, okay? Often there's pages of this. I got pages and pages. Well, actually, those that small that are under a dollar, there were like 17 of those under a dollar. And then as far as the large ones that hit over triple digit I looked at, there's like five of those in here. But here's the catcher on one of them that's over $1,200.
Go ahead. Let me jump in for a second. Sure. Bob told me when he first got these expenditures, now this is the crazy part, why were the expenditures all mixed together? So it wasn't like this belongs to Nettles, this belongs to Beck, this belongs to Firestone, this belongs to Williams. It wasn't. It was just like we're all thrown together.
It was 153 pages just stacked up, and then it was a few pages of one, and all of a sudden you come across another, and you come back across some of the first one. They were not grouped into council member, you know, like you get in packages or something of each one. They were all
that
just mixed together. But anyway, I sat there and took a little while, laid them all out in the stacks, got them all out. But these things here I'm looking at is really interesting because, like I said, it's only got these five columns. First one's a price. The second column rolling down is a date. Like this one here is like over $1,200, 11/30/2021. Okay, now you got then that row's the date. The next row coming down with all these is a bunch of numbers. I don't know, some kind of code number or something, just a bunch of zeros and some numbers. And then you jump over, and then you got another set of numbers, and this is small numbers, 31, whatever it is. Then you get over here, the last thing. This is all this is in this row. I'm leading this whole complete row out for this $1,200. At the end, you get a phone number, 817, doing it live, 454-8328. You get that? 817-454-8328. 8328. There's not a name, there's not a business, and there's not a place to leave a message because it's not accepting calls. So, I mean, that's why I'm meeting with her Tuesday to maybe explain what is this. I have no idea. And no name, no council member on this one. Anyway, this page is here, and there's about five of these. There's another one that's, there's several like that, but they don't have any.
Shame on the city to charge somebody $100. And give them a stack that thrown together, because clearly I don't believe that the council people turn in their expenditures and they just throw them in a pile of with everybody else. I don't believe that.
Mm-hmm.
I believe, and this is just my belief, that there's folders
mm-hmm.
down there for every single council person. So the question is, why did they charge them almost $100 and not put this in adequate files for each council person? So y'all see how tacky that was to do that, and that's mean-spirited, and then charge
and
you for it at the same
time? And I've got about 30 pages here, nothing but just square blank black blocks, and that's it. They didn't cost me for them, but why even send them? Why even do them? You know, but you know what it is, though, see, this is the third time I pulled expenditures, though, in the last 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what gives you something to compare apples with apples with. And what I think the problem is, well, I think these people do a pretty good job at working, okay? She had to redact all these, and that's why they gave to me mixly, okay? They might be all category, but when she pulls them out and steps and redacts them, steps them, maybe. I don't know. I'm not going to try to answer for them, but there might be sometimes there might be an answer to that. But nevertheless, they do a lot of work and everything. But the thing is, we need someone to set down some kind of a manual book on how to do open records and some of this stuff. And these expenditures.
No, I think there's already a process on that, Bob. I'm almost certain.
They're
done
differently.
Each time I
got them, though, Carrie, each time we have different people down there working, they send them differently. So when these people quit and they move on another one, another company people are working to take their place may run the whole thing because there's no one showing them a one set way to each person,
well,
I guess, makes their own.
Let me say it another way. At the end of the year, these expenditures have to have a total. And so I don't believe that at the end of the year somebody's going to sit on the floor and put all these in piles and then decide how much money was spent that year. That I don't believe.
Yeah, no, I agree. They could have been more organized, and they could have had the numbers just like when I pulled them for 13, that other set when I pulled in 2013. Now, they had a total for like District 2 or District 3. Total was $94,433. I can look at that real closely and simply. You know, it's laid out there. And they could do this, too. All those little expenditures they could have added together, those 43 cents and 2 cents and all that, they could have combined all that together to one number. I don't care about office supplies, you know. They can put office supplies, paper, note clips. If it's nothing, you know, if it's not $20,000, we're not going to look at anything. It's just a few $100. And if they're so desperate they want to try to rip us off for $50, and maybe they get it. I don't care. But things we're looking at is the bigger numbers, you know, when you start hitting triple digit. But, yeah, it could be done. You know, that's why I'm meeting with her. Tuesday morning at 9:00. I guess we'll probably spend over an hour going over these things.
I think I would be meeting with her to ask for my money back. I think I would say, you know what?
Well,
now that this is not, you know, something that.
Well, I'm going to city council about that when we get time. That'll be worked in too. They've been great with me working. I mean, I've been calling, talking to them, and that. And I don't know what's on their side of the deal, but they've been pretty good to work with and everything. And I told her, I said, look, I'm not going to stop bellyaching about the money though. You know, and she got a laugh out of that. But I'm going to take that problem to council. That's council's problem, you know. All they got to do is put these things on their website so we can go over and see their expenditures. When we go over the website and underneath their picture there, here's my expenditures. Pop a button.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see what you're spending, you know. Airfare, office supplies. They can condense this like my other ones condensed down. They don't have to give me all the little receipts for every dime, nickel bottle of water, but, you know, they can category their office supplies, and you get a general idea, you know, if you're spending $200 or $300 a year in office supplies. I can't argue with that, okay? I don't know what they're doing, but I can't argue with that. But now if they're spending, like on this one, that had phone. No, that's what's in, you know what? Their phone bill's not in here now that I think of. I don't think their phone bill's in here now that I think about it, because the other one gave me the phone bills. That's how I found out sales with Sal in District 2. His phone bill was $8,000, and everybody else's was like $3,000 and less. So that was interesting.
It just seems like there's no consistency down there right now. And,
yeah, I know.
But they're quick to give you a bill for something that's not. Yeah, that part.
You know, I got a problem with that, too. What do we pay for open records? What are they getting paid? They get paid to do this anyway. It's the job to do. But like I said, these things should be on there, a general thing of their expenditures, okay? And then if you wanted to go into deeper to every little receipt, okay, go to open records. You may have to pay $50 or something for them to get all those little bitty receipts out if you want all that, you know? But I don't think anybody wants it. You know, that little stuff.
Well,
we want it all combined together and get an idea of what's going on with our money. Just a general, give us a general idea. So if anything sends flags up.
I wouldn't pay a quarter for it. I told Bob that I wouldn't have paid a quarter to see what they're spending. And I would have been totally upset had it been presented like this is presented. And then basically you can't even make any sense of it. So I say to the city, listen, y'all. You know, we are taxpayers, and it is a way in which we expect y'all to do business down there. I mean, it's just what it is. And I just think the way that they're doing business, I think the Star Telegram depicted it right. They're acting like children. It's like a level of immaturity that you don't expect from a council. And so do better, y'all. I mean, am I wrong, y'all? Don't they – is there something going on that's not – I mean, Betsy Price, y'all, listen, I had a whole lot of problems with Betsy Price. But one thing I have to give her, she was professional. You know, she might be screwing you, but she did it in a professional way. I mean, so something's off with the way this council is handling business. It's not with a level of maturity.
Hey, Terry, my question is, you know, in regards to the boards they sit on, which I feel it creates – hold on one second. I have something – a vehicle passing my – hold on, my background. In regards to the boards they sit on, from my observation, I feel that the boards that they are placed on, I feel it creates conflicts of interest within the city. It creates conflicts of interest. And my thing is, anybody who sits on a board, if you sit on a board of any type of company, there's some kind of compensation.
Oh, wow.
There is some kind of compensation. So I know they're not being appointed to these boards just to be the face because we are the city. We're going to appoint Adrian to three boards. We're going to appoint this person to two boards. These boards had to compensate their board members. So my thing is the cry about a pay raise, that's the point. Next point I want to bring up, I guess when I get around to it at the next public meeting, I've been trying not to go there with them, but y'all screaming about a pay raise, but you all sit on boards. You all sit on boards throughout the city, which creates conflicts of interest. And on boards, I'm pretty sure you're sitting on the boards, you're getting some type of compensation. Because if you have a council member sitting on a board that's doing business with the city, it creates a conflict of interest. And that company or whoever that organization, they know they got somebody that'll get them more favorable. But you know what I'm saying? Just look at Dallas, y'all. We don't have to go too far. Dallas is right next door. We know Dallas, the problem with Dallas is corruption across the board. I always say if Dallas can fix its corruption problem, Dallas will fix its city problem. But look what happens. Where there's corruption, everything unravels. So these boards that they sit on, I feel like it creates a conflict of interest. I feel like and it just opens up a Pandora's box to other things, you know. And I don't know how I segued into that, but it was just something on my mind, you know. Because we're talking about money, you know. And, you know,
I thought you were talking about things like the zoning board, but you're talking about boards for independent businesses.
It's the board. I believe these boards that they sit on, they have relationships with the city, if I'm not mistaken. Because you know
they're talking about
like
the bicycle board.
Boards across the spectrum. Because think about it, Blaylock. He just use him for example. He just got appointed to wherever Kerry Moon's supposed to be sitting or whatever.
Yeah.
Them boards.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking
all
about.
Every time you come in as a council member, the first thing they do is appoint you to a board. They appoint you to a board.
Mm-hmm.
Every council member gets appointed to a board. Why? Why are
they sitting on board? Well, the conversation is where they start grooming people to take places in this building. That's the conversation. You'll get paid off when you get on a board. You'll get a council seat, mayor seat, or a commissioner job, or a congressman at $180,000 a year, and you don't even have to have a high school diploma. So
they're not hurting. I'm sorry, y'all. This council, they're not hurting for money. Somebody say, "Well, how can you say that? You're not in no pockets. You're not this. You're not that." They're complaining about the job they're doing, but y'all signed up for this. You know, it ain't the money. It's all that comes with it. This is service. This is what service. A person who has a heart of a servant, man, money. Your lifestyle will be taken care of. You don't got to worry about your lifestyle. It'll be taken care of because you're about service. But when you start becoming about yourself and forgetting about the things that you say you're truly about, then that's why we had the issue we're having now. They have forgotten about service. And I think people are more in love with the position and the power that comes with it and than they are with the actual servitude of it.
But you know what's amazing? Go ahead, Pastor.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I want to piggyback on that. I think, you know, Bob and the brother here, when you talk about it's almost designed to consolidate and solidify power, right? And you have individuals that are in positions, and they're like these puppets, right? And they're all, it's like Bob said, you got things going on behind the scenes, grooming. You have these particular associations and groups in XYZ. And so to kind of get back on what the brother said as far as with the board, man, these boards are these zoning committees and just different boards and commissions. They're there. And they're quietly behind the scenes making moves and making impact and influencing things in the city. And my mind just kind of keeps going back to what Bob said as far as we're the people. We're the ones with the real power.
Well, we have the power.
But yet we're not mobilized, right? And so that's when it. You say the conflict, it's a conflict of interest for us, but it's in their best interest for those people, you know? And I just wanted to kind of throw that out there that I think it's intentional, and I think that whenever you look at the whole daily power machine up in, from Chicago, you look at anything across the board, it's always it's almost like you get on this board, I'll scratch your back. And this thing has been going down throughout the ages, man.
I agree. Y'all, and another thing, and we got to close out. Two of these people that are on the dais, One, I think, didn't the mayor spend $2 million running this race? And I think Elizabeth Beck spent close to $1 million, you know, running for the council seat. But you get on the council seat and then you say everything about the council isn't right. And so then you say we need a raise because we're doing so much work. So, you know, the council wants $50,000 raise and the mayor wanted a $70,000 raise. So I really just question if these people have a servant's heart, or, you know, maybe they thought it was a work that they were cut out to do, and maybe they have found out, you know, due to frustration, that it just wasn't. And so that just may be something they should think about going into this next election that I think, 9 months away now, that, you know, maybe some of these people, they did not fit the bill, you know, once they got into the position. That's just my take on that. But, yeah, we got to get ready to get out of here. What we want to do tonight is dedicate tonight's show to the, what is it, Uvalde school shooting. Y'all, that, you know, I still can't wrap my mind around that. So many unanswered questions. So we pray for the family. We pray for the community. And we may never know what really happened, but we hope that the victims rest in peace. We want to say thank you to Patrick Hackett for hanging out with us tonight, and we want to thank Lieutenant Robinson for coming by tonight. We don't know what happened to MJ Harper. She was on the line earlier, and some kind of way she dropped off and never came back. Thank you, Bob Willoughby, for chiming in tonight. Thank you, the audience, for listening tonight as well. We appreciate you. We ask that you tell a friend, tell a neighbor to check out the show. Each and every Friday night from 7 to 9 p.m. We want you to also join us this Tuesday. We're going to do a show out of rotation this Tuesday, May 31st. At 1 p.m., we're going to speak with the folks at the Community Learning Center, also known as CLC. They're a nonprofit who are running an excellent program, from what I'm understanding, training people to have job skills that are underemployed, people that are unemployed, and people who are recently released from prison. So, you know, they're training people to do things like work at Lockheed, drive forklifts, be HVAC people, bookkeeping. I think they train you with QuickBooks and some other key training that you can't get anywhere else. And I understand it's free. It's free. So we're going to talk with them to learn more about what they're doing. That's going to be May 31st at 1 p.m. You don't want to miss that show because they're going to tell you how, if you would like to be a part of that program, I know someone who needs to be a part of that program, they're going to tell you how to get involved. Also, listen, y'all, if you have a business, a nonprofit, a campaign, a service, a product that you would like to advertise here on Let's Talk Fort Worth, we'd love to talk to you about it. Reach out to us via email at Let's Talk Fort Worth. I almost forgot what it is. Let's Talk Fort Worth at AOL.com. That's Let's Talk Fort Worth at AOL.com. Also, listen, if you like what we do, we try to bring you great content every single week. Consider being a sponsor of the show. Also, reach out to us via Let's Talk Fort Worth at AOL.com, and we'd love to talk to you about that as well. Okay, y'all, listen, we got to get out of here until the 31st at 1 p.m. We'll see you then. Good night.